Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 76 for September 26th, 2008. Spider Pig. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook and a whole lot more, visit audible.com/windows. And by GoToMeeting, online meetings made easy. For a free 30-day trial of GoToMeeting for your PC or Mac, visit GoToMeeting.com/WindowsWeekly. And by Visa. With every purchase, Visa prevents, detects, and resolves online fraud. Safe, secure, Visa. It's time for Windows Weekly, ladies and gentlemen. Here he is, Mr. Paul E. Thurrott. He is the star of the show and, of course, the editor-in-chief of the fantastic supersite for Windows at winsupersite.com, the news editor for Windows IT Pro, and the author of Windows Vista Secrets, which is any minute now in the stores. Any minute now.
That's right? True.
Yes.
It finally is true. One of my devices just burped in front of me. I'm trying to figure out which one it was.
Did it actually belch in gaseous
form? No, it
oh, there you go.
The iPhone belch. You
it's
know?
Wandered off.
I thought I might. Now that we're finally recording, I thought I would.
Now would be a good time to stand up and be heard. So how are you doing? You got a cup of coffee there? You're ready to do a fine, fantastic show?
Yeah, I'm good. We're getting rained out.
Yeah, I heard there's heavy rain in your area, huh?
I don't think this would translate well on the video, but I could show it to you. Try it.
Oh,
what could go wrong? Can you see anything? I can't tell.
Hey, we've never seen the rest of Paul's office. For those of you listening at home, Paul has now pointed out the window of his beautiful split-level Tudor home in Dedham, Massachusetts. And yeah. We are seeing into the yard where a grove of elms is dripping. It's quite beautiful.
Yeah, we were joking on Twitter about Sarah Palin can see Russia from her house. And I said, I can see squirrels from mine.
I can see the ocean, and I'm an oceanographer.
Exactly.
But we're not going to get political. No, we are not. Although I would bet, I'm thinking in the Palin household, in the Thurrott household, that you will be glued to the tube this evening, as will most of America watching the debates.
I just hope everybody shows up.
I think everybody's going to show up. They've announced
That's
that.
Great.
Senator McCain is flying down. I think he just landed in Memphis about an hour ago. So yeah, I think we're on.
Good.
Let's get ready. I can't say that because I'll get sued. Did you know that the Ready to Rumble guy will sue you if you say that?
It's good stuff.
All right, enough Tina Fey jokes. Let's get on with the news. It's time to talk Windows. So unfortunately, right after we did the show last week, Microsoft went back and forth about whether the Seinfeld ads were going to continue. At first, everybody was reporting that Jerry had been fired. Then the agency said...
That's not true. I talked to Microsoft about this stuff before this ever happened. That's not the case.
Well, but was this their intent, is to do two commercials and stop?
Yeah, their intent was to put some teasers up there to get people talking, which is certainly what happened.
It did work.
Yeah.
So this is their plan. And, it's interesting because I watched the new I'm a PC ads. And of course, I think more people watch them on the web than would have if you hadn't had these two Seinfeld episodes. And
sure.
I noticed, at the end of the, I think actually in both ads, doesn't Jerry mention about how you've connected a billion people? They talked about connections and they echoed that in the new PC ads. So it may be it was all planned. It was all kind of carefully orchestrated. But from the outside, Paul, from people who aren't like you, who have a hardwired hotline to Redmond, it looked as if Microsoft changed his mind.
Okay. But who are those people that you've just described?
Because everybody, I would say, Paul.
No. Everybody who's talking about this, you mean. I think that to the wider world, there were some Seinfeld ads and now there's these other ads. I don't think people make any connection. I don't think a water cooler at Shell Oil, which is suddenly the company I mention all the time, that two guys were like, hey, did you hear they got rid of Seinfeld? You know, I think this is in the under the microscope that is Microsoft these days with the blogger community and so forth. That discussion occurred, but I don't think.
This You don't think anybody who saw the first two ads was not baffled by them?
I think people were baffled by the first ad, but I thought they did a pretty effective job of explaining what they were doing, that this was the introduction to a conversation.
But remember, those are the same. These are the people who aren't paying attention to Microsoft's edicts from Vatican City. They're just seeing these ads on TV. So let's say you were watching Thursday Night Football.
Though. In other words, the first one was like, what? I mean, even the I knew it was coming, and the first time, and you go into it with whatever preconceived notions you may have. I mean, you got to remember, I've been sitting here for 2 years saying, why don't they fight back? Why don't they fight back?
Right.
And then I know the ad's coming. They tell me when it's going to be on, what it's going to be, and I see the thing, and it's like, what? You know, what the heck was that? You have to kind of watch it again. And okay, yeah, but I think the second one was much, much better.
Okay, and then the third one, which was exactly the kind of ad I think you were calling for, it was a direct attack on the Apple ads.
Attack, but attack sounds a little more harsh than what it is. It's more like
response.
It's a response. It's like, hold on a second. Hold on a second.
Now, about those who say, oh, Microsoft should be above that fray? They're our number one. Why would they respond any more than Hertz would respond to Avis?
Because Microsoft has been not responding for years, and it has hurt them.
They've been hurt.
Yeah.
Whatever you have to say, they have been hurt by them. In perception, if not in sales.
Well, perception results in sales. I mean, you know this from being an Apple guy. Apple has been running these switcher ads for years. And they started off with those Ellen Feist type ads, remember?
Yeah.
You know, Janie Porsche.
They were awful. God, they were awful.
They were what they were. I'm just saying, you know, people have been talking about this iPod halo effect ever since then.
Right.
As if it were something real. But it never happened until very recently. And I would say that I think Apple latched onto this Vista thing because even before Vista came out, they had mentioned Vista in one of these ads with the I'm a PC guy and I'm a Mac guy. And I think it touched a nerve. And I think they latched onto it. I would argue they've also beaten it to death since then, but whatever. I mean, this is what's successful for them. So, portraying Vista as a disaster from Apple's perspective has worked out very well.
As an Apple guy, I just want to point out something. I'm sitting in front of a Vista machine. Oh, there's a Mac, an XP machine, and an XP machine. So I'm only 20% Apple, just like most of the rest of the world.
Wow.
Well, I mean,
that's about five times the rest of the world, but okay.
It's twice. But it's 10% now, Paul. And that, I think you
10% in the U.S.
In the U.S.
Less than 4% worldwide.
Right, in the U.S. So, you're right. I am predisposed towards a Macintosh. But still use a lot of Windows.
I still enjoy our conversations, and I
you forgive me.
I wash thoroughly when we're done, but it's okay.
The I'm a PC ads seem to me very effective in saying, "Hey, it's not Apple doesn't have a monopoly on the cool, interesting people."
Yeah, in fact, I think the one thing they were trying to push. I've seen it's amazing to me watching the really devout, fanatical Apple followers kind of circle the wagons and try to respond to this because I think Microsoft's been very effective saying, look, there are 1 billion people using Windows. That's a very diverse group of people. It's not just a huge group of people. It's a really diverse group of people. And they're doing all kinds of things in Windows. And some of that stuff is really interesting. And I just think it's effective. I think it's smart. And yeah, okay, they're number one. You know, why even respond and all that kind of thing? You have to look forward. I mean, Microsoft as an entity knows that the computing landscape is changing, and they want people to, stay on their platforms. And it's not really, if you think about what's going on with these ads, if you really pay attention, it's not even specific to Windows Vista, is it? You know, they're really talking about Windows. You know, they want to push the concept of Windows, not just on the desktop, but also on phones and also on the web, which I think is where a lot of the stuff is going to be happening in the future.
If I were Microsoft, though, and I think we talked a little bit about this on MacBreak Weekly, I would really focus on what the world knows to be the superior points of Windows. More applications, more choice, more choice, more gaming choice.
I think that
lower cost, more variety of hardware. Those are very strong selling points.
Maybe. Some of them are getting to be less strong because, like, as we've been talking, I think a larger and larger group of people, especially younger people, are doing a lot of this stuff on the web. And when you're doing things on the web, email, calendaring, you know, context management, you know, even word processing and photo manipulation and sharing too, right? You know, what one of Apple's biggest strengths, I would say, over the past decade has been this iLife suite of applications, which is amazing. But, you know, the truth is, a lot of that stuff, you know, even though you could argue today, like iDVD is probably better than anything that's available on Windows, nobody is making DVDs. You know, they're sharing photos up on YouTube or, I'm sorry, not photos, movies, you know, on YouTube or, one, or a similar video site. You know, and I think this is all part of a reflection that the world is moving on, you know, to something that's a little different. So, you know, the breadth of the Windows application library is wonderful. And I think one of the unstated truths of Windows is that one of the many reasons people choose Windows, and I know it shocks people to hear that, but people do choose Windows, is they know that their brother, their sister, their friends, their whoever has Windows, and that if there's going to be any sort of, you know, sharing of applications or whatever, because this does happen, you know, they know it's going to work.
That's a great selling point, too. You should say that. Remember, in the 60s, in the 60s, there was a saying that nobody ever got fired for buying IBM. Unfortunately, that's the corollary of what you just said, which is, and I don't think Microsoft wants to push the idea that, well, it is the safe thing to do.
Right. And that's not something I absolutely.
Yeah. You don't want to push it for that reason.
Hey, look, I mean, we can joke around about the Mac versus Windows stuff all day long. The truth is, both of us, and I assume anyone listening to this, enjoys technology at a deeper level than this sort of partisan baloney stuff. And I like good technology. The fact that Microsoft is a safe choice does not excite me in any way, shape,
right,
or form.
Right, right.
You know, that's not, this doesn't get me going in the morning, you know.
So that's what I'm saying is, and I guess in a way, this is what Windows Not Walls is trying to say. Focus on the choice, the variety, the choice in hardware platforms is, you know, you can only buy a Mac from an Apple, from Apple. You can buy PCs from thousands of vendors. That's all good for PC people.
Okay, I guess. Yeah, okay, fine. You know, there's some advantages to Apple's model, too. I'm not sure that that distinction is meaningful to a lot of people.
Maybe not. Well, it is. I'll tell you where it is. In price. There's price competition on the PC side.
Listen, I just configured a quad-core system at Dell.com with, I'm serious, including 8 gigs of RAM.
Yeah.
$600. Wow.
What?
That's $665.
That's where price competition gets you. Now, there's a negative. There's a dark side of that, which is there's no support. And, you know, sometimes the equipment's marginal.
Listen,
none
of this, yeah. No, these things don't exist in isolation. But, you know, and I think I told you this story when I was out in Seattle. I walked into a Best Buy, and they had I think it was a Dell system there as well, a quad processor, a quad core system with, I think it said 6 gigs of RAM, which is an odd amount. That might have been a mistake. But 19-inch screen, a printer, you know, the whole thing was like $900. You know, I mean, I try to configure a quad core Macintosh system for, you know, double that amount. It's almost impossible. But that's not why people buy these things. I mean, I think Apple has made a good business for themselves being sort of a high end, you know, quality PC maker of sorts. Right. I mean, people perceive a certain quality in what they're getting, even though you can break down the components and say, hey, you could get the same thing at Dell for half the cost. Yeah. Okay. But that's not really what they're buying.
Yeah.
You know, they're not buying a bunch of silk.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know. I think there's
lots of places you could go with this ad campaign. I'm sure that we will see those places because this is clearly just the opening shot. But I think, it's an effective opening shot.
Yeah. I think this is, I would say, I guess looking at it broadly, I think that second Seinfeld ad was fun and funny, but, you know, obviously nothing specific to Windows. This one, you can at least say effective.
Oh, yeah.
And you can look at it and say, yes, exactly. And I think it's and by the way, not syncing to the level of the Apple ads, which is, frankly, a lot of really negative stuff going on there. You know, the stereotype thing and you know, we've talked about this a little bit. I mean, there's just some crazy stuff in those ads. You know, the Microsoft ads at least are positive, and they don't really dump on the other guy,
right?
You know, and I think that's important to do, especially when you're in the position that Microsoft's in.
Yeah,
because I think then it just comes off as really that would be incredibly petty.
Right. No, I like the idea of them saying, hey, the world is great. The world is grand. And it's thanks to Microsoft. And isn't the world a great place? And we did a great job. I mean, that's the way to go. Take the high road. Sure. Take the high road. Hey, before we go on, I want to say goodbye to a company that's been a great sponsor for the last 3 months. And I hope that they come back. We've loved having them. Of course, I'm talking about the good folks at Visa. This is the last Windows Weekly they'll be on. And so we want to remind you, and I hope it'll stick in your mind, that when you go shopping, online or off, you take your Visa card with you. Why, friends? Why? You tell me. Because it's safe and secure. That's exactly right. All the purchases you make with Visa are absolutely safe. Visa protects you against online fraud. They use real-time fraud monitoring, sophisticated technology to identify and respond to fraudulent activity. Their real-time fraud monitoring is the best in the business. Gives you complete peace of mind. It makes you know that when you're shopping online, you're safe and secure. So thank you, Visa, for your support of Windows Weekly. We really appreciate it over the past 3 months. And we encourage everybody to support Visa in return. Safe, secure Visa. It's going to be a little sad doing the show without our friends at Visa. So, Paul, we agree. I think that ad campaign is a good first step. I kind of can see the outline of it. Did Microsoft tell you that Seinfeld would be back, or have we seen the last of him?
Without revealing specifics, I think it's safe to assume that he will be back.
There'll be more. You know, actually, that's not a bad way to go. They get a lot of talk. People then paid more attention than they would have to the I'm a PC ads. There'll be some interest when he comes back. It'll be another one of those things you got to see. Hey, there's a new Seinfeld ad in a month or two. Oh, wow, that's great. I think all of that might, it looks more coherent than it might have.
I don't know how coherent it is, but, you know, the Seinfeld ads were very much like those internal videos that you and I talked about previously.
They were.
Microsoft had done this series of these ads, very much like that.
We said and, that they should do those. That's how they should do their ads.
Microsoft's public image is so poor. You know, they make these really funny videos, but all anyone remembers is the stupid stuff that gets leaked online, you know, like that awful Bruce Springsteen thing that happened a few months ago.
And that was just, an internal sales video. The stuff they do for CES and Comdex is the best I've ever seen anywhere. And we I think you and I talked about the one with Ballmer and Bill driving along in that Volkswagen picking up the Sun server. And to make your point, these Seinfeld ads are very similar.
They are.
Same sense of fun.
In fact, I have to think they went to this ad agency and said, look, here are five or six of these things we've done. Do this.
Because they use Bill Gates? Is it because he's so synonymous with the Microsoft brand? Because, I mean, he doesn't.
Yeah.
He's retired.
So well.
Yeah. Okay. You couldn't have used Ballmer.
Mostly retired. But he still devotes a certain amount of time each week to Microsoft.
Right. I'm told my internal sources close to Microsoft.
Okay.
Say that the soup Nazi will appear in episode 3. I'm just saying. Mac for you. No Mac for you.
That I've not heard, but that would be great. He was on Arrested Development as himself, which was interesting.
Yeah. So I actually did it. I can't believe I did this. Me, Mr. Big Mouth iPhone user, I ordered a G1.
Yep. You should.
You think?
Of course.
Here's some problems, and especially for Windows users.
Problems.
Doesn't support Entourage. It doesn't. Not in Entourage. Exchange. Doesn't support Exchange. Doesn't support syncing at all. Apparently, you have to use Google stuff. It'll sync with that.
Well, for now. I mean, it's an open platform.
To me, I have to say, I love the HTC
hardware. HTC makes good hardware.
Full keyboard, I love.
It's a consumer device. I think, you know, the Exchange stuff, that can happen. At anyone could add Exchange support.
I guess. It's not right now. It's not a choice for business.
No, it's a
choice
consumer
for not even consumers. Well, it's a choice for enthusiasts.
It really is, yeah. And you know what the biggest problem with this thing is the T-Mobile network.
Yeah, it's edge only, right?
And God help me, I never thought I'd say this, but I mean, T-Mobile makes AT&T look like the future of online connectivity. I mean, it's a sad joke.
Plus, the first time that when they first announced with this, that the G1 got 1G, 1 gigabyte 1G. Per month total, and then they slow you down to 50 kilobits. They backed off on that, thank goodness.
Sure.
But at edge speeds, you know what? A gigabyte is a lot.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about it. I will say this, by the way, you know, I have dumped on the iPhone a lot, and I think for good reason. But one thing, since this last update, the 2.1 update, I have noticed that it works better. And I've noticed this in areas where I was previously embarrassed to own this thing. You know, I have the famous example where we're playing basketball on Monday night and we want to see what the Monday night football score is. And Paul has a fancy phone. Why don't you look it up? You know, and I first went to two
waiting,
different
working.
Boards. Well, first I went to sites. I waited and waited and working. Waited and then found out, oh, this site has Flash. All the major sports sites actually use Flash. Fox Sports does not. So I finally got onto Fox Sports. Load, load, load. Oh, now I got to go to a subpage. Load, load, load. Finally, this guy says, screw this. Picks up his cell phone, calls his brother, says, what's the score? Gets the score. And he's like, fine, we're done. Let's go.
Oh, that's humiliating.
You know, and here I had been sitting there for 15 minutes like a jerk trying to get this thing.
But Paul, everybody, every one of us with any kind of smartphone has gone through this. My wife does these races. She says, let's see what's showing at the theater. I said, I can do that. She said, let me look in the paper. And by the long before I get that. Right. So we've all gone through that. And that's
probably
not
eventually buy tickets on the thing if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that stuff actually works. It's much better now. And my Monday Night Basketball, I get the 3G connection. I can bring up Fox Sports very quickly.
There you go.
I still have to bring up Fox Sports. It's, you know, the one major site that doesn't use Flash.
Will the G1 do Flash?
Probably. It's going to have to. It does. It's going to have to play YouTube, right?
It does. Yeah. I called Google. And I asked for a review unit, and they said, we're going to get you one. You'll be embargoed until a date at some point before the ship date, but not as soon as you get it. So I won't be able to tell you that I've got it when I've got it. But if I tug my ear.
Yes.
Like
give
that,
me a little wiggle if you.
If I adjust my shorts.
Yes.
But I am a T-Mobile customer. I have a BlackBerry.
Oh, you are. This is my issue. I can't pre-order it because I'm not a T-Mobile customer.
So I pre-ordered. One of the reasons I'm a T-Mobile, Verizon, and AT&T customer, and Sprint, I have all four, is so that I can review whatever phone comes out.
You know, it's not because you can have too many cell phones?
You can have too many cell phones. You can definitely have.
I actually know that.
I have cancer in my butt. So probably anyway. So, but I will, it's $35 a month for unlimited text and data. Good price.
Well, plus what is that? Is that the,
that doesn't
the
include
data
voice.
Plan?
That's data and doesn't text include, doesn't include.
So
voice.
I saw they had a $25 option on data, which is pretty cheap. And then what's the cheapest voice plan you can get?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't looked. It's probably $20. You're probably talking $60. I pay $60 right now for voice and data on my BlackBerry. You're probably talking maybe they'll make it a little bit less. They're underwriting the phone a little bit. I mean, $179 is a good price for that phone, I think.
Well, that's all right.
I'm pretty excited.
I did see my house is on one of the few 3G zones they have in the country.
Oh, T-Mobile even has 3G? I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah, they do.
What do they call their 3G?
I think they just call it 3G.
Oh, okay.
They call it barely available.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's literally available in 13 places, including Dedham.
You must be an experimental region.
I think I'm just getting failover from Boston or something.
Okay, let me see. I'm going to go to these street level coverage maps. Well, that would be nice if I had 3G. I don't expect that.
AT&T's was horrible, but this one is an order of magnitude worse.
Edge is terrible. It's not even, and by the way, this is a complaint there. I think there are lawsuits even now against Apple because many people say their 3G speeds are nothing like what they're showing on TV and really not much better than Edge.
You know what the problem here is, right? If you had a Windows mobile phone and you were running that little thumbnail size version of IE and you were getting web pages that, let's face it, look horrible in a stupid browser anyway.
You wouldn't care.
You wouldn't be doing it a lot because the experience is lousy. And if you were doing it a lot, you'd be going to these little mobile sites anyway, and you'd never notice the speed. And I think what's happening here is, you know, we have this first device where this experience is actually decent and people are using it a lot. And it's, you know, it's just not working. Not the device necessarily, but the network.
Right. Well, I will let you know. I'm sure you're going to get one as well for review. They seem to be pretty generous with the review units. I have high hopes.
I think the openness of it is very interesting. You know, Apple has gotten a lot of trouble recently with denying certain apps. And, you know, some you can sort of understand, but some are like, you know, this sort of competes with something that Apple makes. It's like, guys,
oh,
come
on. It's totally bogus.
That is not good.
They're utterly fascist.
They are, yeah, strange about it. There was a great article, I think it was on Salon, that I linked to today, where he said, you know, explain how it is that Apple, you know, like pulls certain things but doesn't, you know, pull others. You know, there were apps on there like Pull My Finger.
Yeah.
You know, that I Am Rich application that cost $1,000.
Well, they did pull that, but still.
They did pull it, but it was on there. And then, you know, there's like a flashlight application.
Yeah,
you know?
It's
turns the screen white.
Well, there are like a dozen flashlight applications.
Yeah, purple, sir.
It is a little odd. Well, we'll see. I think openness is good. Somebody mentioned, I don't know if this is true, that he thought that T-Mobile was going to do free apps for the first few months in the T-Mobile store, which would be a very interesting.
The apps there will be right away, but you know, people of Google and people will enjoy the openness of this. So you're going to see a lot of I think on the iPhone, what you see is a lot of the old Mac programmers jumping on board because they know the platform pretty well.
Right. It's straightforward.
I think on this side, what you're going to see is the Linux guys.
Right.
Those are different types of programmers. Let me tell you.
Is Android Linux kind of?
I think it is based on Linux, isn't it? The underlying platform?
Beats me. I don't know.
It doesn't matter in a sense. I think what I'm trying to say, though, is that just that the types of people who will be attracted to this platform are going to be the Linux type guys.
Yeah, I think it's an enthusiast phone. And if it really is open, I think this is the phone that a lot of the people who listen to our shows will be interested in.
This is going to be the one where you can bring up like a full screen DOS session and, you know, Telnet into your server.
Yeah, baby. SSH.
You know, people are going to be doing this stuff.
It is. You know what? I'm looking at the Android SDK. You use Eclipse. It is very much like developing for Linux. You're exactly right. So, that's who it's going to attract. It's basically Java.
Okay.
So if you're a Java programmer of any kind, you'll be able to do this pretty easily. Let's talk about Windows Live, the apps. We talked a little last week about this. You have more to say, I think.
Well, it looks like they're finally starting to roll out the services part of it. Remember last week they released the application suite.
Right.
And that stuff's really cool. It's funny. I've been using this now. I've been dying to get my hands on this. They showed it to me at Microsoft, but they wouldn't let me have the code. And there's a bunch of little things going on there that are really interesting, both from a user interface perspective. We found out since then that the basic UI of these Windows Live applications is the UI of Windows 7. So if you boot up, so bring up something like Windows Live Photo Gallery, the new, you know, the beta version, and there's sort of a unique looking light blue toolbar there that has no graphics. You know, there's text, but there are text buttons, and that's what the Explorer UI is looking like in Windows 7.
Very interesting.
So there's sort of some interesting integration there, I guess, a look and feel integration. But there's also, you know, the services angle. There's a few things going on in this next 30 days that will be very interesting to anyone who's into Windows. You know, we're going to talk about PDC in a little bit, but Microsoft is working on this new underlying platform up on the web, of which Live Mesh is obviously a big part. So they're sort of refreshing their online services as part of this wave 3 as well. So Windows Live Calendar got a major refresh. It's actually really nice and really usable. And Hotmail's coming next. And in fact, I had expected to see Hotmail updated before we talked today, but it hasn't happened yet. So hopefully in the next couple of days. But I know that coming down the road, in addition to refreshing all of their existing services, you can think of things like, MSN Spaces, Windows Live Spaces, which is their, blogging and photo sharing service. They're also going to have new services coming out, which I can't discuss, but you'll see, in addition to refreshing the existing stuff, you'll also see some new services. So I think the next few months are going to be really interesting from a Windows Live perspective. So
Taxi Cab is saying in the chat room that his Hotmail changed today. So maybe,
really?
Yeah, maybe they're slowly.
Oh, maybe it's happening to certain people.
Let me log in. Sign in.
Yeah. I just logged in before we started talking.
All right. Oh, that's often the case, though. They'll roll this stuff out.
Yeah, exactly. So I know where to look for this.
The new Hotmail? I don't know. See, I wouldn't know. Windows Live Hotmail. Get it. get it. It says get it, man. So I have my idea.
Well, if you're in the Windows Live, you know, the best website out there that covers Windows Live is called liveside.net. And Kip over there is especially good. He does, in fact, have an article.
Oh, I see what they're doing. So I had to log in, and then it told me whether it was available for me or not. So in my case,
it does it actually say that?
Yeah, it says the Windows Live. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm confused. No, oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm basically looking. What they're doing is you may, in the current version of Hotmail, there are two interfaces, and this is something Microsoft didn't want to do. They originally just planned to replace the Hotmail UI with the new version that, you know, the most people, I would assume, use. But a lot of their old timer users were complaining because the classic interface.
I like it the way it is.
Yeah. So they had to keep the classic UI around. And what they're doing now in the new version is they're merging them into one version again, hopefully combining the best of both worlds so, you know, that nobody will complain. But it says, let's see, there's going to be an enhanced address book. There's going to be 5 gigabytes of storage with an additional 500 megabytes per month if customers hit the limit. Hmm. Web-based instant messaging with Windows Live Messenger, improved spam fighting, and integrated calendar features and Outlook connector. Yeah, so some features will take several months to reach all users globally.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I can't. I'm trying it with. I guess it works with Firefox, which is kind of nice.
Sure.
IMTV. It doesn't work with Safari, of course. Live Hotmail. I don't know. Is this the new one or the old one? How do you know if it's the new one? Because it has the calendar and all that stuff?
The current one has a deep blue bar right across the top of the screen.
Yeah.
With the home Hotmail spaces. That's the one that's always been around.
I must be on the old one. Oh, too bad.
Yeah. I'll keep checking.
Now, it says switch to classic, but this isn't the new one. I'm on the old new one. There's a new one.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. that will never get confusing.
The new one I don't have yet. And maybe that's what Taxicab has. He might have the old new one.
I wonder if you were to sign up for Hotmail today if you would get the new one. I don't know. I'm signing. You know, one of the nice things about the Windows Live stuff is you can switch back and forth between different personas. I wonder if...
I would like to be a 34-year-old guy named Chuck.
I didn't mean it in that fashion, but okay. Fair enough.
Please, may I? I did something the other day that I think you'll be proud of.
Yes, sir.
I upgraded my Zune to 3.0, signed up for a Zune Pass, and they have some nice features. I like the channels. You can subscribe to the Grand Ole Opry channel, and the nice thing about the pass is you don't have to pay for songs. So any song on the channel, you just get it. And they have mixes by different people, and there's a classic rock mix I got.
Yeah.
It's good.
I like the Zune Pass thing, I have to say, and this is a first for me because, you know, $15 a month is tough, but...
I thought it's tough.
I've been around for a while.
It's for a certain kind of music listening. If you want to hear a variety of songs, you're not attached to any particular song, and you want to fill it up. So I was able to fill that 4-gig Zune with just a few clicks. And then some.
Oh, I've downloaded easily 40 albums or so.
Yeah.
You know, just.
So I just have the little pocket Zune, but now I'm pretty, they have exercise mixes, walking, running and aerobics or something. And so that's by beats per minute. And then I guess these change. I presume these change regularly, right?
They change every week. That's
so you subscribe and you'll just get automatically when you sync your Zune, you get new music.
That's right.
I love that.
Yeah, it's pretty good. The thing that's interesting, though, is. Some of this stuff gets better over time. So they have channels that they'll pick for you specifically based on your listening habits. But that won't happen right away. You have to be using it for at least a week. And the same is true of a feature called Picks. And these are the two things I was waiting on before I could start writing my review because these features were not available on day one in every day. What I decided to do over the past week was I wanted this thing to have an understanding of the type of music I have on my system. So I thought, well, you know, maybe the best way to do that would be just to put my entire collection on shuffle and just walk away and let the thing run every day and just keep it running. You know, so I've kind of let it sit over there in the corner. And
you don't even when you're not listening, it's always running.
Yeah, just for the first week, because I want it to
fill up,
get an understanding of what it is that's in there. Because
you don't have to vote. You just have to put what's on. You just have to play.
Right.
Because they have that heart, broken heart thing too, you can do.
That's right. Yes, right. Of course. So every day I would come back and check it. And every day it said, come back later, you know. And I think it was yesterday morning I got up. And actually, it was weird. I came in my office before I did anything else downstairs. And I just looked at it for the heck of it. And it had filled in with stuff. And that first day, what it filled in with was so ludicrously bad and so misguided. I took pictures of it. I couldn't believe it was that bad. And I this was actually disturbing to me because I've seen this thing in action. I you know, talked to Microsoft the week before in Seattle and saw the thing. And, you know, we've been talking about it a little bit, but of course I've been waiting for it to kick onto my own system. And it was just, it was so horrible. I just couldn't believe it. And what it was suggesting on the first day was there's a genre of music, which is unfortunately called New Age music. And this is instrumental music. It's often misconstrued as sort of elevator music. Some of it is actually quite good. And one of the guys who's big in this arena and is all over the map, you know, some of his stuff is fantastic, but some of it is laughably bad, is this guy named David Arkenstone. And he's not necessarily well represented in my music collection. I mean, I have a few of his CDs, but...
Isn't he a magician?
No, he should be, though. He actually, this guy, I don't want to ridicule him. I mean, I do like some of his stuff, but... In fact, his very first album was made entirely on a Commodore 64, which gives him a certain props in anyone's book. But, you know, he makes these albums that are sort of like soundtracks of movies that were not made. You know, so it's like, here's what the Lord of the Rings soundtrack would like sound like if I made it. You know, that
love
kind
it.
Of thing. It's,
love it.
It's kind of pathetic. But he apparently lately has been making these new age versions of like standards and you know, classic easy listening songs
that
and
sounds
stuff.
Sounds painful.
You know, Singing in the Rain and stuff like that. Yeah. So this is what was recommended on my picks list that first day. And I mean, this is not even close to what I want to listen to. It's this openly deserving of mocking. It was horrible, horrible. But this morning when I got up, it had filled in with a lot more stuff.
Ah, okay.
And there were a bunch of new channels. So even back on day one, I think I had, you know, there was sort of like a Just For You channel in the Zune marketplace. But now there's these different channels that are just for me. So they have, you know, Hard Rock channel just for you. They have Classic Rock.
Yeah,
just for
and you. They have a lot of those. There's like 50.
Those are actually pretty good.
Because so you're narrowing it down, and then it says, "Oh, well, you like David Arkenstone, you might like the Nintendo theme." They have
pretty much, yeah.
They have a video game music channel on the Zune.
Well, here's the thing. We've talked about the Genius feature, and now you know Microsoft has their own stuff. This is what I want to know. I want to pick a song, and I have the perfect song. In fact, let me find it so I can give you the exact name because it is the perfect one to test. There is a song that was in the movie Hannibal, right? We talked about Hannibal, the book recently, which, you know, it is, it's not really by Hans Zimmer, but it is, you know, included in a lot of his musical collections. And it's an opera. And I'm not into opera at all, but it's on soundtracks, right? So if I take this song, and it is the only song in my collection that's anything like this.
Right.
And I go into Genius and I say, make me a playlist
based on this.
It's called Bitty Coramium. It's beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful.
I will eat your liver with a fine Chianti.
In fact, Ridley Scott, who made the movie version of Hannibal, loved it so much, he used it in Kingdom of Heaven as well.
Wow. I want to hear it. Okay.
You can look it up on YouTube.
So are you asking, what are you going to get as recommendations? Soundtracks or opera?
Right. In other words, this will tell us something very important about these technologies. Because if you go into either one of these things and say, make me a playlist like this.
Yeah.
What will it give you? Will it give you things that are sort of opera type music, which you can't do because I don't have any other opera music in my collection? Will it be really stupid and give me other songs that are on soundtracks? And if it does that, by the way, these features are absolutely worthless.
But it's a soundtrack.
But what does that mean? I mean, it being a soundtrack tells me nothing about the song. There are hard rock songs on soundtracks, classical songs, classical 50s songs. I mean, those things don't go together because they're on soundtracks. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This could tell us how sophisticated are these things? Well, it doesn't do anything. In iTunes, it actually tells you it can't do it.
Yeah, because it's that might be the right answer, by the way.
It might
just
be
one
right
song.
Now, well, I do actually have other music by Hans Zimmer. He did the soundtrack to something called Millennium, which was a PBS series from probably a decade and a half ago, which is excellent. And I suppose there is other soundtrack music that is somewhat similar to this, you know, in that it's instrumental, like some David Horner stuff or something like that. But I have yet to, you know, let's see if I can play this without having it come up. But if I play this song and then I go into mix view, let's say on the Zune, you know, you can, it's funny how long it takes, you know, but what it comes up with, sure enough, are soundtracks like Jaws, The Dark Knight. I don't know.
It just depends on what you. Now, I think you're asking for, and this is, by the way, the thing that, you know, Pandora says. We did the Music Genome Project, and what we looked at is pitch, style, you know, and I doubt they looked at things like meta tags like soundtrack.
But hold on a second. What Microsoft is doing, so they are soundtracks, but you know what they are? They're soundtracks where the music is, in fact, instrumental. That's semi-intelligent.
Okay, that's close.
That's not bad.
Eclectic. All right, let me enter into Pandora. This might be an interesting.
Okay.
Pandora is, I would say, arguably the most sophisticated of all these tools because of this whole. It's based on the Music Genome Project, and we have live.
I was thinking what these things should come up with is a list of music I've never heard of.
Yeah. Well, okay. Right. Okay. So I'm going to create a new.
I don't know anything about this kind of music.
I'm going to create a new channel. Let's see. Create a new station. Now you got to tell me the artist is Hans Zimmer.
Well, he didn't. Yeah, it's typically credited to Hans Zimmer, although he's actually not the person who made it.
Hans Zimmer, Klaus Badalt, and Jeff Zanelli.
There you go.
And what is the name of the song?
It's Vidi Cormium. So it's VIDE.
Cormium. It's a fine Latin. It's I see your heart on my sleeve.
Yeah.
Right, let's search the Music Genome Project. Can't find.
Tell you, this is like I found the one song that just trips everything.
Well, I'll just look for Hans Zimmer. It knew about Hans Zimmer. So now it's searching. We're now creating a station that will explore songs and artists that have musical qualities similar to Hans Zimmer. They are going to call this Hans Zimmer Radio.
Okay.
To start things off, here's a track that's musically similar. By Howard Shore.
See, I bet it isn't. Is it some Lord of the Rings song or something?
Yep. Sounds a lot like Lord of the Rings. It's called A Storm Is Coming.
Yeah, it's from the Lord of the Rings. That's nothing.
Okay.
It's just classical music.
It's classical music. I don't like it. That's over. All right.
You're right.
Let's try. Let's try a new station. Because, what's the name? Vidi Cormium. Let's see if they know that. Do you want Vidi Cormium by Catherine Jenkins? Let's try that.
Actually, she might be the vocalist, so yeah.
Let's try that. Now, this is Vidi Cormium music. It's kind of semi-classical.
Yeah, I mean, that's closer.
This is Ave Maria. So they'll be singing in it. It's a little slushy.
List or something?
Huh?
Maybe the same woman as the vocalist?
No. I can't tell. Haley Western Ra on Odyssey. Is that close?
Well,
it's singing.
That I know this. I mean, I think we'll
with a fine Chianti. And a plate of fava beans.
I'm fascinated by the here's some music, find other music like it thing. You know the.
But you know what? This is the same stuff that we get from Amazon, from TiVo, from Netflix, and I've yet to see one where I go,
it's
"Wow!"
A little smarter than you know. Other listeners bought this. Like, okay, great.
I think that's smarter. It's human.
That's okay. You know, that's okay.
I don't think a computer knows Vidi Cormium. From Bibbidi bobbidi. Well, yeah,
clearly it doesn't, you know, but.
All right. So anyway, I wouldn't blame Microsoft on this. I mean, it's just, this is a hard thing to do.
Microsoft at least comes back with something, and it's reasonable. You know, Apple throws up its hand.
But again, like I said, that might be the right response.
It might be the right response because I don't have anything in my collection. But on the other hand, why isn't it showing me some stuff up on iTunes that is, you know,
well, doesn't it do that? Doesn't it say?
It says no.
It doesn't say anything because sometimes on iTunes it'll say, "Well, I don't know that, but how about this?" Here's a popular song.
You're making me launch iTunes. I'll tell you what it says. Do you want me to do that?
No.
I'll do it right now.
I don't want to know. It's by Patrick. Okay, here we go. Solus Suite said it's written by Patrick Cassidy. Libretto taken from Dante's La Vita Nuova. Produced by Patrick Cassidy and Hans Zimmer. Performed by Danielle Denisa and Bruno Lazzaretti.
Those are the two vocalists.
Yeah, I want it now. You've made me want this.
It's a fantastic song.
Well, all right, I'm going to Amazon. Now, here's the thing. What I should do, is it on if I go to the Zune store, will I be able to get it?
I think, in fact, there's probably at least a few versions of it there.
Okay, see, that's good. That's good. I usually get it at Amazon only because there's no copy protection and then I own it. But I see I am paying this $15 now. Sure. So I probably should start taking
advantage. You can sample it and maybe you won't like it. You know?
Did you like in The Fifth Element? That weird operatic song in The Fifth Element.
Actually, that's an awesome example. It's a lot like that song.
Yeah.
That's a great example.
Yeah. That was kind of an oddball operatic, but sci-fi, but...
Turns into all like a pop song at the end or a dance.
This is good. This is pretty. Yeah. I'll have to get that. I'll put that on my Zoom.
What Apple says is Genius is unavailable for the song. And it says if Genius. You choose to update, it's, you know,
Genius
you can
fell
try
asleep.
Again. Yeah, I mean, all this sidebar gives me is other things by Hans Zimmer,
right?
Including Spider Pig, which is classic, by the way.
Oh, Spider Pig, doing what a Spider Pig can.
Does no like can he swing from a web? No, he can't. He's a pig.
Really, it goes like that.
That's unbelievable. Yeah, it's good stuff.
And moving right along on the we learned something. I think we all learned something today.
I think we did.
Yes. We're going to talk a little bit about PDC. Microsoft has made the other shoe has dropped on WinHack and PDC.
Yes.
Very exciting news. Details to come. Also, a new mouse from Microsoft, a new Microsoft mouse. Didn't we already talk about that?
Well, now I have them.
Oh, you got it. All right. We will talk about that in just a bit. Before we do, I do want to mention GoToMeeting.com. Our good friends at GoToMeeting.com sponsor this program because they've got such good taste. Have you ever used GoToMeeting? Let me tell you, GoToMeeting is amazing. It is that program that allows you to do online meetings. And it is, I use it all the time. I talked about it last week. We used it to prepare that speech in real time. You don't have to travel. You don't have to meet face to face. And frankly, with the cost of gas, what it is today and the pain flying, everybody should be using this. Microsoft should use this so you don't have to fly all the way to Redmond. Now works on both PCs and Macs, which is good news. You could use it for sales presentations, product demos, training, collaboration. Setup is so easy. You just click, click, click. In a couple of minutes, you're set. Not even that much. And then the good news is your clients or colleagues, the people who are doing the meeting with you remotely, it's very simple for them. And that's important because you don't want them having to jump through hoops to see your sales presentation. One low rate for unlimited monthly meetings, as many meetings as you want. I mean, I could go on and on. The IT department love it because they don't have to configure routers or firewalls. It just works. Fast, easy, secure, and I want you to try it free for 30 days. Go to gotomeeting.com/windowsweekly. gotomeeting.com/windowsweekly. You could sign up right there. No charge. You'll get an unlimited month, absolutely free. This is the chance for you to show everybody in your office, show your boss, This is, I think it's promotion material. The boss is saying, Smithers, you're brilliant. Let's have everybody use this. Great for training, too. You could, you know, in-house training. You have the program on your system. They don't need it. They just run it on your system. It's fast. It's easy. Go to meeting.com/Windows Weekly. From the folks at Citrix who do go to my PC as well. They really know how to do your stuff. Online meetings made easy. Go to meeting.com/Windows Weekly. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. We talked about this mouse, Paul, because this is the one that I can't use because I'm a lefty.
No, this is a different mouse.
Oh, a new one.
So when I went to see Microsoft, I got a, what do you call it? The Blue Track mouse, the one with the blue laser.
That's the one you liked. Yeah, that's the one we were talking about last week.
That's what I like because it's humongous. And right. One of the things I think that's really saved my, you know, computing career in some ways is, you know, I use an ergonomic keyboard, which is very important, and also a very large mouse. And these two things have combined to relieve the stress I was feeling years ago in my wrists. And when I go back to a laptop, if I'm on the road for a long time, it's brutal on my hands. But when I'm home on these larger, you know, the larger keyboard with the spread out keyboard and larger mice, it's great. So the Blue Track mouse just happens to be a very large mouse as well. It's wireless and everything. It's great. But the Arc mouse, which just shipped this week, is the small one. I don't know if you can see me. Oh, yeah, you can.
Well, not everybody can, so describe it.
Right. What it looks like, I have pictures up on the website, but it looks like a little half circle. And it's very small, and it folds down even smaller. So you can travel with it. And the transceiver is teeny, and it fits inside, you know, the part where you fold down. But this thing is ambidextrous. It's not designed for right-handers. So if you're a lefty or otherwise disfigured, you may find this mouse to be more acceptable. Now, the only problem I have with this mouse is that it's small. So for me, with my, you know, humongous gorilla hands, I can't really use it. So I'm going to let my wife use this for a few days and see what she has to say. The other issue is that there's a back button on the side so you can go back on web pages and so forth. And it's so far forward on the mouse that it's a little bit hard to use. But, you know, the nice thing about it is the transceiver is teeny. It's like a little USB. It's almost double the size of the part of the USB port that goes in, you know, that plugs in. It's just a teeny little thing. And it just works. There's no drivers. There's no disk. You don't have to install anything. You just plug it in and you go. And yeah, you may actually like this. You should check this thing out. It comes in fun colors. I think it's a neat little mouse. I
see the picture, and it is left and right, right? I mean, it doesn't look like it has any bias towards one way or the other.
Nope, it's no bias.
Is it comfortable? I know you don't like it as much as your blue one, but
it's just not big enough for me personally.
You have big hands.
Yeah, and a freakishly large human being, so it may be okay for other people.
Arc. It's called the Arc. It's really, you know who it's for? It's for people who the computer's kind of invisible in the living room or whatever, and they want it to look really sharp.
It's great for that stuff, but also for people who travel. You could actually...
Oh, it's that small.
Because it folds up into this little package. It's so cute. Microsoft even... it comes in a little bag, you know, that has that metallic top that, you know, seals closed. So you can put it in this little pouch and throw it in your bag and, you know, bring it with you on the road. It's nice.
Okay.
I think it's cool.
I can get excited about a mouse. I want you to know I'm man enough to get excited about a mouse.
There you go.
So this is the Arc mouse, but there's the Mini. Is that the same or is it different? I'm confused.
No, so there's an Explorer mouse, which is the one I'm actually using most of the time. That's the larger
Blue
Track.
Yeah.
And then there's Explorer Mini, which used to be called, I think the old language was they would call it a notebook mouse. But what they're finding is people either prefer the small one or the large one. They don't think of it in terms of, you know, what type of machine they use it with. So the Mini one is probably more designed for people who would travel with it, you know, because they want something small. So that's also a Blue Track mouse. So it's, you know, works on more surfaces and so forth. The Arc mouse does not use Blue Track technology as a traditional optical mouse.
So,
or a red light mouse or whatever.
But so how, it's just a different color or does it really work differently?
No, what's different about it? Which one? Which one are we talking about?
Oh, go answer the phone. I'll figure out what you're talking about. Is it the blue laser?
It No, I would say in most uses it works exactly the same. I don't know that it, you know,
I remember now. It's just works better on those weird surfaces that the red laser doesn't work.
You use it on shiny surfaces.
Yeah, I've had a terrible tile. Yeah.
It's a typical example if you have a tile countertop where the mouse just doesn't work right. You know, typically a mouse doesn't work right on that type of surface. The Blue Track has no problem with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. All right. Are you ready, sir?
Am I ready?
I'm ready. PDC. I'm ready. Here comes PDC. They say,
I can't wait for PDC.
They say it's a Windows 7 show.
Well, actually, it's more of a live mesh show.
Oh.
But
that's what I get for reading the tech news.
No, there's going to be a lot of Windows stuff. Well, they're going to give out the first build of Windows 7 there, which is exciting. A pre-beta build. I think we discussed that previously.
Yeah.
In the past, they've given out these really nice DVD sets, you know, 40 gigabytes or so of data, I think was the last one. This year, they're giving all attendees a 160 gigabyte hard drive that's full of stuff, including the build and virtual PC environments and so forth. So all the stuff they're going to be talking about.
That's kind of cool. They just give you a hard drive. Wow, I like that.
One of those standard, if you've seen them, the WD Passport drives.
Yeah, I have like eight of them. I keep buying them like candy.
Exactly.
They're addictive.
Chiclets for adults.
They are. They really are.
So, yeah, this is going to be the big one again. And, I 2005 was a bit of a letdown for PDC. Not as much stuff.
Is that the last time there was a PDC? Was 3 years ago?
Yeah. They typically do them in relation to platform releases. That's almost always, but not always, been Windows. You know, they did one for .NET out in Denver, whenever that was, 10 years ago, maybe. A long time ago. This year it's going to be live mesh, but again, you know, a lot of Windows 7 stuff. They're also going to do some Windows 7 announcements, at WinHack, which is the Windows Hardware Engineering Conference that's happening the week after PDC, also in LA, also at the LA Convention Center. So yeah, that's going to be an interesting time period for people. If you're interested in Windows 7, it's all hitting the fan, as we say.
And anything else? Now, is WinHack is not the same thing?
No, WinHack is for hardware. PDC is for software. So they're going to split up the Windows 7 announcements. I haven't been told yet how they're going to do that, but the announcements will be split somehow between the two shows.
And where is it going to be and when?
Los Angeles.
Okay.
The PDC, I think it starts on the 26th of October.
This is exciting. You're going to get your Google Android phone, and then 4 days later, you get to go to PDC.
I know. I just changed my flight. I'm going to go out a day earlier than I was because I guess some stuff's happening that Sunday. So I'm going to fly in on Saturday. I think that might be the 25th or 24th. I can't recall anymore, but it's going to be a busy week.
Your book comes out right around the same time or sooner?
Sooner. I believe it was just printed on Monday.
Ooh.
And I think it should be in stores within a couple of weeks. I have a link on the website now. If you pre-order it, it's 37% off on Amazon.com. And I was talking to the folks from the publishing company. They're going to ship me some ginormous box of books, and I'm going to give away books off the website somehow. Oh, I haven't decided how I'm going to do that yet, but
that's exciting.
There should be a bunch of those. So that will start in October.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So let's take a break and come back. You've got a tip of the week, and you've got software of the week, and I want to hear them both. But first, by the way, a listener sent us the software of the week this week.
Yeah.
I want to hear an Audible pick. This show brought to you by the good folks at Audible.com. They do those great audiobooks we're always talking about. 50,000 plus titles, including my first audiobook. By the way, they're asking me to read more. They liked it so much, I'm going to do some more. They use the best people, not just people like me. They actually use professional trained actors, the best in the business. So when you listen to a book on Audible, it comes to life. We've talked about books like Shadow Divers that just, boy, that, you know, you could read it on paper and you won't get the same experience as you do when you listen to it at audible.com. It's better than a movie, better than anything, because it's in your mind. You're building the sets, your imagination takes over, and it's incredible. In some of these cases, like Dune, you get a dramatization with multiple voices. If you like listening, and I know you do because you listen to podcasts, if you like listening, if you remember the great days of old radio theater, this is like that times 10. Audible.com. What a great way to listen to the best literature in the world. Science fiction, history, biography, business, self-help. It's all there. You're listening. I know you like a lot. You like history and you like politics. What are you listening to right now?
So the pick this week is, you know, again, we've been talking a lot about the election and so forth. So this is Bob Woodward's latest book about the Bush White House. It's called The War Within, The Secret White House History, 2006 to 2008.
Uh-oh.
Do you hear yelling in the background?
Sounds like my house.
Apparently my family has forgotten that I'm recording today.
Sounds like my house. Jennifer had to drag my son up to see his grandmother today, and it was a battle every step of the way. I don't care what you say. You are so
neighbor. Kids has come over. You know.
Oh, that's it. It's not your kid. It's a neighborhood kid.
No, it is my kid, but it's, you know, the excitement that follows. You know.
Oh yeah, fun and games. So, what is your book again? Did you start?
Right. What is my? Yeah. It's called The War Within.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. This is good.
Secret White House history.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, are you familiar with the book Fleeced by Dick Morris?
No, I'm not a big Dick Morris fan, to be honest with you.
Okay,
I've been watching his commentary lately on the various news channels, and I'm not
sure. He's kind of a crazy guy.
He's kind of nutty. He's a guy. Okay. Remember, he's got his toes sucked. He was in the Clinton campaign.
No.
There was a little sex scandal involving toe sucking. Okay. I think that was Dick Morris. If I'm wrong,
This one I have not listened to yet. I didn't want to recommend it, but I was looking at it and thinking, this looks interesting, unless this guy's a total crank.
He's a very, you know, he was an advisor in the Clinton administration and is considered a political, I would say political guru. But he fell out of favor after the toe sucking incident.
as one would.
Apparently, he has a fondness for toe sucking. I don't know whether it's his getting his toes sucked or sucking somebody else's toes. But anyway, he was on the cover of Time magazine as the man who has Clinton's ear. But maybe they meant toe. I don't know.
Okay.
So
did you notice that
is Dick Morris's book on Audible also?
It is on.
It would be. Yeah, no, you know what? He's I tell you, the guy is never boring. He's a very interesting guy.
Well, all right. I have enough crazy time in my day to day life, so I wasn't sure if I should go there. But, oh, you know, I noticed we did Human Smoke as a pick before. Didn't
yes,
we?
Yes, yes, yes.
Anyway, I just noticed that they're advertising the Zune on Audible, the compatibility.
Yes. You know, I haven't tried it yet. My experience with iTunes and the Zune is so good. And I never really liked Audible's download manager. And I think you have to go back to that.
Well, except for one thing. You know, one thing I've noticed on the iTunes side is books are often much, much more expensive if you go through
iTunes. Oh, I don't
buy
them through iTunes. It is the same book. But no, you can have an Audible subscription. And when you download it directly from the Audible website, it opens in iTunes and it syncs through iTunes.
Yeah. So they don't do that on the Zune side. You actually get their manager. It's okay. You know, it's okay. But all you have to do in the software is say, I want to use this with my Zune, and it will sync them right to the device. And when you do that, an audiobooks entry appears in the menu on the device. You never see this stuff in the PC software. It's only on the device.
I like that. Yeah, and the other thing is it's smart enough to give you the best quality for the Zune. Exactly. So it knows what to give you.
Which, if I'm not mistaken, by the way, is identical to the one that's used.
I'm sure it's the highest quality. Audible tells me they're doing a new, higher quality. Because, you know, it's funny. I've been with Audible since day one.
I wish they were. Yeah.
And in the earliest days, the quality, because people didn't have bandwidth, they were on dial-up. They had two types or three types, and they were fairly low quality. Then they came up with the Type 4 that is essentially MP3 with a wrapper around it. And it's pretty good quality, but they could go even higher.
They could clearly go higher. There's a unique kind of compression that you hear on audiobooks. And I know that, you know, when it comes to audio compression, spoken word is different from music.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me on the spoken word, but you do hear it sometimes on the music if there's a musical.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of these are not interactive, but they're multimedia.
Right.
You know, there's other stuff going on and multiple actors and so forth.
They're going to do that now that people have the bandwidth. This is one of the reasons I like Audible. They really pay attention to this stuff. So tell me about the book and we can
Oh, I'm sorry. So, well, the Bob Woodward book is basically just the, I believe it's the fourth in his series of books about the, you know, the Bush and War, the series, you know, the Bush White House books. And it's basically just a history of what was going on behind the scenes at the White House over the past 2 years. And
are you enjoying reading this, or are you kind of thinking, I don't have to think about it anymore, it's almost over?
Well,
I guess we should know. I guess we should.
Honestly, I just love this stuff. And I always go back and I look at, there are Bob Woodward books I've read over the years that I have not read recently that I'm considering now going back and looking at. There was one he wrote about the CIA director, Casey, I think it was, Vail, probably from the early 90s. That was really, really good. And every time I grab one of these, I kind of look through the list and I think about, you know, revisiting some stuff. But I'm eager for this era to end, I guess. But it's still interesting historically, certainly.
Yeah, yeah. The War Within, A Secret White House History, 2006 to 2008, bringing it up to date. It is available on Audible, but it's available free if you go to audible.com/windows. audible.com/windows. And as I mentioned, they're constantly keeping up with the latest technology. Now on the Zune, that new Type 5, I guess they're going to call it, will be out soon. I think Audible is, I mean, there's no question now, they're the place to go to get audio books and audio entertainment, speeches, comedy, radio shows. It's all there. Audible.com/windows.
The Type 5 that you're talking about, are they advertising this anywhere?
No, it's top secret.
I see.
I just breached a confidence.
Huh? Gotcha. Okay. I'm curious about it.
No, I don't, you know, when I was there, we talked about file formats, and it's really interesting. One of the things that they are really attached to, they're not particularly attached to DRM, the publishers require that, but they like the idea of this stuff playing anywhere and you being able to resume where you left off. You know, one of the real problems other formats have for books is getting back to where you were before. If you buy a CD in the store and rip it and put it on your iPod or your Zune, it's a pain. Because you have you have to bookmark it or remember where you were, and it doesn't always work. So they really are, the AA format that they use is really all about ease of use. So you don't have a bunch of chapters. There's chapter markings within it, so you can move from chapter to chapter, remembers where you were, just a lot of nice little things. So I asked them about that. I said, yeah, we're working on a new format, higher quality, more features. I don't know how much I can say about it, but it's on its way, and it really is going to be a big improvement. There's another feature I'm not sure I should mention that you're going to really like.
I hope it's 3D.
Yeah, it'll be 3D audio. The speakers will be coming from behind you.
Oh, I when I was in the hospital 20 years ago, my friend Dave bought me an audiobook on cassette at the time.
Yeah.
It was a Stephen King one, actually. And it had that 3D positional audio effect. So, you know, the fly would buzz by your left ear and come out in front of you and buzz by your right ear again. And it was kind of neat.
Wow, that's really neat. I don't know if they do that yet. I'll ask them. I'll give them a ring. Software or a tip? Which do you want to start with today?
It doesn't matter. Let's do tip.
All right. Let's throw them off. Let's confuse them. Or actually, we always start with the tip, don't we?
I don't
even remember, to be honest. This is a tip that is stimulated by something we talked about some time ago, which was ClearType.
Yes. So I think I had noted maybe last week or the week before that you can download the XP Power Toy for doing ClearType, and it kind of throws some fits in Windows Vista, but it actually works. And so Colin Hamilton sent me an email and said, you know, actually, all you need to do is visit the Microsoft website, and they have using Internet Explorer, and they have an ActiveX control and a page that will tune ClearType for you without.
Yeah, but that doesn't work on Vista, does it? I think it says, oh, this is for XP only. It does work.
They all say that, but, you know, I was just
ignore them.
Yeah. To see if it works, you can make it really fuzzy and then go put it back.
Well, this came up for me because it doesn't look like Chrome is using anti-aliasing, and it really didn't look very good.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, isn't that basically what ClearType is anti-aliasing?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Okay. So, if it's not turned on, I really feel it, but some people hate it. They feel like the letters aren't crisp.
I think it depends on your monitor and your eyes and all kinds of factors. So, But that's the point of the tuner, because everybody sees things a little differently. So, you know, you may want the text to look a certain way that I might find, you know, fuzzy or whatever. And I may want text a certain way that you don't like, and you can fine tune it to your own tastes.
Yeah. ClearType, go to Microsoft.com. It's a long URL. We'll put it in the show notes. Like Microsoft.com/typography/ClearType/tuner.
/tune.
.aspx. Do you have to enter that? You don't have to. Do you have to enter all
that?
Yeah, you do. Oh, man. Isn't there?
We should have made a tiny URL for that.
You could well, I'll make one right now if you want. I could do that. Let me make one. I use snip URL. What do you use?
I just use tiny URL.
I'm going to see if I can do this. It already exists. Let's see. Well, if it already exists, maybe it already goes there.
Yeah, I was going to say, that should be okay.
I was going to do it. No, it's in French. Some Frenchman did it.
Okay. tinyurl.com/2yk.
2yk? No. Give it a real name.
Huh? Why? What's the difference?
Paul's Clear Type.
Oh, no. No.
It isn't Paul's. Let's see. Squeegee Man. Let's see if I can get Squeegee Man.
How about just ClearType?
All right. Microsoft Windows ClearType is snipurl.com/squeegeeman.
Oh, come on.
S-Q-U-I-G-E-E. I think I misspelled Squeegee Man.
I got it. CT Tuner.
There you go. Does that work?
It works.
All right. That's at short URL?
Tiny URL
or snip URL, both of them. CT Tuner. That's good. You're good. You're a natural wordsmith.
Oh, man. I should write for a living.
You should. So should I. I got to get out of this podcast racket.
Exactly. You need to make a life change.
I need to make a living. Software of the week.
What happened to your effects board that you had to resort to?
What was the sound I played? I can't even remember anymore.
I don't know. You need like a reveille type thing or a...
I think it was sad trombone. That's not right.
I can't hear it, so I don't know. But...
You don't want to hear it.
That's not appropriate for software pick of the week, but...
I'll save it for a more appropriate moment.
Oh, there'll be plenty. So this one is also from a listener, Fabio Storino from Sao Paulo, Brazil. We were talking about renaming. Remember last week we had the tip about moving from file to file and, you know, rename.
Right.
He recommended some software that will automate renaming. Oh. And this is the big problem in Windows Vista. You know, you can actually select a bunch of files in a folder. And then rename them in order, but it really messes up the numbers. It's kind of terrible. So the type of place where I would need to do this would be with photos, especially. You know, sometimes you import photos from a camera, or maybe you get photos from someone else, and instead of having descriptive names, maybe it says like DSC-1109, you know, something like that. And you want to give them descriptive names. So you can do that in Windows Explorer, but it's lousy. Fabio recommends something called Ant Renamer. And it's just an application you can run. It renames multiple files, and this includes files and subfolders if you wanted to. There's all kinds of crazy stuff, but you can change extensions. You can change, parts of the file name by, using, global strings and so forth. It works really well. This is another thing I was just playing with today. So if you're looking for a good way to rename a bunch of files, this might be something to check out.
Ant Renamer. I think they should put a little tagline, as used by Fabio.
Right.
Fabio uses...
Seen on Windows Weekly.
Fabio uses Ant Renamer from Belgium. ANTP.BE. I think that's what .BE is. Belgium. They also have Ant Movie Catalog.
I don't know anything about that one.
Anything about it. I am 28 and live in Brussels. My main hobbies are cars and movies. And I wrote Ant Renamer. Very cool. Thank you, Fabio. Thank you very much. And thank you, Mr. Paul Thurrott. We have come to the end of this Windows Weekly, and not a moment too soon.
Okay.
We've run out of energy. We've run out of steam. And we've got to run out the door because there's a big debate tonight.
Yes, there is.
So I will see you next week. We'll talk more about the lovely, wonderful world of Windows. And I will continue my Windows bashing because people count on me to do that. So just let you know. And you can continue on your whatever it is you bash.
Jihad to change the hearts and minds.
To restore Vista to its rightful prominence.
Its rightful place. Or simply move on to the next version, whichever comes first.
Or whatever the heck it is. Sure. Hey, Paul, it's good to talk to you. Congratulations on the book being printed. That's exciting. Should be in bookstores any minute now. Windows
it's mostly
Vista
exciting
Secret.
Because it means I don't have to work on it anymore.
You can't. It's done.
You know.
Although, knock on wood, this won't happen to you. But the 2003 Leo Laporte's Computer Technology Almanac came out with the word almanac misspelled on the binder. On the binder.
Nice.
It was in a laminac.
Awesome.
How it got through the multi-stage editorial process, I have no idea, because this is the cover.
You reviewed, the PDF proofs or whatever they gave you at the
time. It was on the cover. I didn't, they didn't let me see the cover. If they had let me see the cover, I think would have noticed a laminac. So, then laminac. So they had it all printed. This will not happen to you. And they had to send him back to the factory. I don't know how they remove the glue. They probably have to, heat it up and put on a new cover.
Oh, that's incredible.
But if you have one of the rare 2003 Alaminacs.
Alaminac.
Let me know. I'd like to have it on my shelf. Check your Alaminac bindings. Can you believe?
Good.
This is a pretty big publisher. You'd know them by name.
I think I know who they are.
Yeah. It was kind of a shock. Not yours. Not Wiley & Sons.
No, not a high-quality outfit.
Not
like
a high-quality outfit like that. I wrote five more books for them after that, I believe. Seven, something like that. Just shows you what I know. Paul, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you next week on Windows Weekly.